Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome everyone. Thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks, asking the question, why wait for heaven? On 1-2 Radio, changing the way we experience life and spirituality. On today's show, I'm happy to welcome back writer, web designer, and ACIM teacher Bruce Rawls. And on today's show, we're going to talk about priorities and values, and how we assign those values, and how we give things priorities in our lives. Specifically, we're going to be looking at workbook lesson 133, which I think may kind of surprise you. It's not exactly what you think at face value. This lesson is, I will not value what is valueless. So if you have it handy, you might want to pull out your workbook for students and turn to lesson 133 while we're talking today. You can also join us in the 1-2 Radio private page on Facebook. And if you've never been there before, you just go to our website, 1-2radio.com, and on the left side, you're going to see a chat button. And when you click that, you'll be automatically redirected to Facebook, and you can just ask to join the group. So I'll see you there. So let's get started. Welcome and good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, CA.
Hey, well, thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on again.
And also, thanks again for another wonderful topic. I can hardly wait to hear what you have to say about this.
Well, I started looking through, and partly inspired by a lady in a local study group who's been going through and picking certain words out and finding places in the course, in A Course in Miracles, that refer to those themes. And what came to mind was priorities and values. And I found that there's a handful of references to priorities. I think there's like three, but values, there's like 128.
Wow.
So, and then that kind of led me to lesson 133 in the workbook. I will not value what is valueless. And that one is a real doozy. In fact, that actually was one that I found an acronym that I call GIST, guilt, individuality, space, and time. That if you kind of go backwards from paragraph 11, 8, 7, and 6, you get that acronym. But that was actually inspired by one of the topics that was in Ken Wapnick's Journey Through the Workbook when I was reading that a few years ago. And but the whole idea of values, I think, is so crucial to the course, because it really basically reminds us that everything that we place an emphasis or a value on in this world can either be used by the Holy Spirit, aka the inner kindness teacher, or the Jesus of the course, or it can be used as the ego's weaponry and arsenal of no goodness.
Right. It's always that kind of either or, isn't it?
Yeah.
One or the other.
It all boils down to those two thought systems, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Always. Yeah. No matter what it looks like, no matter how complicated it seems. Like, for instance, before, a week or two ago when we were talking about the labyrinth, we can go through all these little different, generations of something, but it always comes back to the same thing. It's either the ego or the right mind.
Exactly.
If only we could get that.
It's so simple.
You would think that wouldn't be too hard to get.
Well, I think it's helpful to be kind to ourselves when we recognize how invested we are and how much we value the thought system of separation and the belief in duality, because it's purposive. And we also talked about that as well, is that it's purposive. And what A Course in Miracles adds to a lot of Eastern philosophies is, and mysticism, that Ken Wapnick pointed out, is that the purposive nature of the two thought systems is such that one has the purpose of leading us out of the dream, and the other has the purpose of leading us further into the dream and its identification with its illusory nature. And that's where the values come in. So how about if I read some of the lesson 133?
Oh, I would love that.
Okay. Which is the heading of that is, I will not value what is valueless. And it starts out, sometimes in teaching, there's benefit, particularly after you've gone through what seems theoretical and far from what the student has already learned, to bring it back to practical concerns. This we will do today. We will not speak of lofty, world-encompassing ideas, but dwell instead on benefits to you. well, of course, it's all about the mind. So
yeah.
if we think the mind is lofty, then it could be a bait and switch here, right?
Right.
And then it goes on to says, you do not ask too much of life, but far too little.
Oh, I love that line.
Isn't that great? Because
I love that line.
I think that basically reminds us that we're settling for, you know, the shell of a third class oyster instead of the pearl, you know, or a better metaphor is we're settling for nothing, because that's really what the ego represents in truth, instead of having everything. But the ego can't comprehend the everything. That's why, you know, there's places in the course that says, you know, here's what, you know, oneness joined as one is, but you're not going to get this. So, so I won't dwell on it, you know, that, and it's like, and I love how, you know, Gary Renard's commentary is, gee, thanks, you know, like, you know, it's like, well, tell us something that we can be able to. So, but this really does, you know, allude to the fact that the reality that is waiting for us, just for our acceptance and for our endorsement of it by choosing the right thought system is really everything. But we get, fortunately, we don't have to wait for the big payoff, so to speak. We get moment to moment reprieves from the ego's torture and insanity by the feeling of peace that we get, even if it's fleeting. It's a cumulative thing. The moment that we let go of our insistence on being right, and by saying that this lifetime that I'm identified with, this specific body and the stories that I associate with this Bruce character, are somehow going to pay off for me someday, and that's going to be, you know, my big win. The more we recognize that that's not really going to work, the more, you know, we realize that the ego is really offering us nothing. You know, the big payoff at the end is oblivion in ego's cosmology, whereas the end result of following the curriculum of forgiveness is everything. It's really the totality of a oneness joined as one, that again seems abstract, but that's the quality of feeling, I think, that has led us to A Course in Miracles, or to tune into the feeling and the awareness that what we are is so incredibly wonderful we can't even imagine it. That I think is the value that is being talked about here, is that everything is really our birthright, our heritage, our true nature, but we've masked it over with so much, you know, so many distractions and so many diversionary paths to try to, you know, get to it, that we forget that it's right there in front of us. It's right. It's always there. We just need to lift the veil. So that paragraph goes on. It says, when you let your mind be drawn to bodily concerns, to things you buy, to eminence as valued by the world, you ask for sorrow, not for happiness. And then this is another favorite line, speaking of favorite lines. This third one in the second paragraph says, this course does not attempt to take from you the little that you have.
Because you've got nothing.
Yeah. That's actually being kind. That's actually sort of, you know, a euphemism for saying you ain't got nothing.
Yeah.
But it does. But the fact that it's not trying to take it away is basically saying, you know, knock yourself out. You know, see how many variations on the dream you can come up with if that's what you really want to do. You know, our inner kindness teacher, aka Holy Spirit, says, I'll be waiting here for you. You know,
just like you said, knock yourself out.
Twiddle my thumbs until you're ready to, you know, consider the idea that maybe forgiving yourself for making up this, you know, all these stories isn't serving you, you know, and investing in the stories. And I think that the investment is really, you know, where this value idea comes in, because what we're invested in is what we experience. That's our lot in life, you know, and in any given moment is what we're invested in. But all the different investments of the world really are just smoke screens and distractions for the investment that really just a matter of acceptance. We don't have to do anything. We don't have to earn it. We don't have to learn it. We just let go of the insane learning, in heavy quotes, that the ego has that we've adopted from that fake identity. And voila, you know, the light is revealed when we, you know, dissolve the barricades. And then the last couple of sentences in that paragraph says, it does not try to substitute utopian ideas for satisfaction which the world contains. There are no satisfactions in the world. Can we be more blunt? Well, isn't that, you know, if we're really honest with ourselves, if we, you know, kind of like kids unwrapping presents at Christmas, I think that's kind of one of the perfect metaphors is, you know, you 5 seconds or, you know, 5 days later or somewhere in between, usually 5 minutes typically, you know, the kid has gotten bored with the toy and they're playing with the box, right?
Mm-hmm. You know. Well, and isn't that us our entire lives?
Yeah.
I mean, when I was thinking, this is such an incredible lesson. And even though at first it can be kind of shocking when it's like, you know, yeah, go ahead, have at it, because this stuff is without value anyway. You're kind of like, well, wait a minute. But you know, how many of us have not had that experience of believing that the next thing that we get in our lives is what's going to make us happy? And it never does. I mean, we know that. It's such a temporary thing. You know, we're always going to want to see the next movie or get the next book or have the next relationship or whatever, or the next gourmet meal, whatever it is. We're never going to go, okay, this is it. Now I'm totally satisfied and I want nothing else.
Right. Yeah. If that was the case, then we'd only have to have sex once. We'd only have to eat once.
Right.
We'd only have to get one job. We'd only have to associate with one perfect person. You know, I think as I'm saying this, it comes to mind as, you know, all the times we've tried all the variations of those things, you know, the countless mechanisms by which we try to make this world, you know, perform for us. But we're beating a dead horse, you know,
mm-hmm. But you know, it's hard to know that. And this is one of those lessons where you read it and, you know, even after all these years, I feel that little bit of resistance, just
uh-huh.
a little bit of resistance coming up going, well, you know, I want to argue with it.
Right,
because
right.
This lesson actually, you know, goes so far as to say, here's the test for whether or not something's worthy. You know,
right.
this, we're going to tell you whether or not what you're choosing has any value. And this is how you do it. And I was like, okay, yeah, tell me. And then when I read the criteria, it's like, well, are you sure? You know?
Yep.
Are you sure?
And right off the bat, you know, the criteria that we conveniently, you know, the inconvenient truth, as Mr. Gore might say,
yeah,
that the Course puts out is that you know, it has to be eternal. It has to have no time specific element for it to work consistently, and just about everything in the world that comes and goes doesn't meet that criteria.
Right.
Yeah.
But see, that's where my ego does start arguing. Right there. Because I go, well, wait a minute. A bowl of chocolate ice cream, it doesn't have to last forever. Mm-hmm. You know, it's good right in this moment. So right. What are you talking about? What do you mean that if it doesn't last forever, that it's valueless?
And
of course, I'm taking it pretty literal.
Yeah.
But you see, my ego automatically is going, well, no, wait a minute. You know?
Well, I'm glad you said the word literal, because it seems like because we think we are bodies, and we think, and we've so convinced ourselves and so adapted and gotten in character for the roles that we think we're fulfilling, you know, in this massive holographic stage production, we've forgotten that we're actually symbols, we're actors, we're representatives of a thought system that says that it was possible to split perfect oneness. That's the ego's, you know, whole idea, is that we were able to pull this off. And because of that, those symbols then become the measure by which we evaluate everything. And so we evaluate, you know, does this bring me happiness? And well, if it brings the body happiness, if it brings the persona, which, you know, the body's just really the puppet of, that separate, seemingly separate persona self, then we think, oh yeah, this is good. And if it doesn't, and if it brings us pain instead of pleasure, then it's bad. But it's I think the course is suggesting not that we're going to try to short circuit the ego or you know demolish it or you know somehow whittle it away in some fashion. We're not going to get rid of it because it never existed. We have to shift to a completely different thought system that suggests that it never happened. It never occurred, and that's where the little starting out a little anyway is the little grin creeps across our face when we realize, oh yeah, there I am again, making a big deal about that bowl of chocolate ice cream or that next job or the next whatever, fill in the blanks, you know. And it doesn't mean that we don't do those things. It just means that we don't take them as seriously, particularly in the realm of affixing our identity with those things in terms of thinking that somehow the self that we believe we are is going to derive a feeling of peace from that external experience in some way or another.
Right. Yeah. Right. But this is where sometimes doing the lessons or when we read things, we get that level of confusion.
Right.
You know, between what the form is and what the content. And so when it says, if you choose a thing that will not last forever, what you choose is valueless, it's not really talking about those illusions like the bowl of ice cream. Mm-hmm. It's talking about something much, much more enduring and saying that that's it. If you choose something that has a temporary value, then it really is not in the big scheme of things valuable.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's the T of the GIST acronym. And I've got this noted in the margins of the workbook lesson here. So should we just read that paragraph?
It says, yeah,
first,
please.
If you choose a thing that will not last forever, what you chose is valueless. A temporary value is without all value. Time can never take away a value that is real. What fades and dies was never there and makes no offering to him who chooses it. So there's the time criteria by which to you know turn the lights on and watch the ego's cockroach thought system try to scurry away, you know, and into one of these categories. And so if something doesn't last, that's a huge clue right off the bat. And I think that's why this one's the first, because it's basically, you know, the ephemeral, fleeting nature of so many things that we go for in the world. Again, nothing wrong with doing it, but if we can adopt that attitude that moment to moment, I can begin to see that this is not, you know, going to make me eternally happy. And that the eternal, unchanging peace and happiness is what we're really, really, you know.
Right.
Well, and that, work.
Well, yeah.
Work.
And that is where we get confused, is that we think something temporary, we think something in the illusion really can confer happiness.
Exactly.
And it doesn't.
No.
It does not.
No. And the fact that that paragraph concludes on the next page with, he is deceived by nothing in a form he thinks he likes. another great line. You know, it's all about the form for the ego, because the ego doesn't understand content. It just totally doesn't get it. It's not in its vocabulary, because the content is really the ego's content, of course, is the whole thought system of sin, guilt, and fear. And it doesn't want us to look at that, because that's it knows that if we looked at those crazy ideas, that we would see that they're insane and that we can choose against that whole thought system.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it's afraid of. It's afraid of that decision-making capacity in our mind that says, oh, well, that's stupid. That's insane. Why would I do that? If I had the least bit of, you know, sobriety or sensibility, you know, if I was sane, why would I want what's valueless?
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know what I'm kind of thinking? I don't know if this is a segue or not, but there was a commercial on television a few months ago, and now I can't even remember what they were advertising. I think it was a phone service, you know, one of the cell phone services, and saying that they were cheaper. But what they showed is these people getting off a private plane, and, you know, they really made it up. You know, these are the very young and rich and, you know, have not a care in the world. Mm-hmm. And they get off this private plane, and somebody says something about, hey, we can save you this much money on your cell phone service. And they looked at each other and they said, why would we care? And You know, I mean, it was very funny. I'm not doing it a service, but you know, it's that same kind of thing. I'm thinking that, you know, it's like, why would we care about something when we know where we can get true happiness? Mm-hmm. If you know the source of something, or if you know where real love is, then you don't get confused by just one temporary form, because you can always go get more, you know, from the source. Right. I guess that's what I'm saying, is that, you know, we don't get real caught up in this pair of jeans or this pair of shoes or this purse or whatever it is, if we know we can always go get more. And on a psychological or a spiritual level, we're not, you know, obsessed with the form that love comes in if we know that there's always more love.
Mm-hmm,
you know, mm-hmm. Love can come to us through many, many, many different channels.
Absolutely.
So we could be like those people and just go, why?
why yeah, exactly. Why would I want to limit myself to what was made to limit love, you know, as the Course puts
right.
it. You know, yeah.
Yeah.
And then I think that's another example of you know, how we get fixated on the form. And then the next paragraph picks up from there, and it goes into the S in the GIST acronym of space. It says, next, if you choose to take a thing away from someone else, you will have nothing left. This is because when you deny his right to everything, you have denied your own. You therefore will not recognize the things you really have, denying they are there. Who seeks to take away has been deceived by the illusion loss can offer gain. Yet loss must offer loss and nothing more. And so the whole thing of you know, the laws of chaos, you know, go into this in great detail, and we've talked about that before. But anything that has to do with space, if we are limited to a specific space, to something, you know, a specific form that occupies the length, depth, and breadth, you know, of a form, we're saying, I'm choosing to limit myself to just this tiny little sector of even within the dream of stuff, instead of realizing that, like you were talking, alluding to, you know, this infinite reservoir of peace is there just waiting for us to accept it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the next one, I think, talks about individuality. It says, your next consideration is the one on which the others rest. Why is the choice you make of value to you? What attracts your mind to it? What purpose does it serve? Here it is easiest of all to be deceived. For what the ego wants, it fails to recognize. It does not even tell the truth as it perceives it, for it needs to keep the halo, which it uses to protect its goals from tarnish and from rust, that you may see how innocent it is. And the innocence in quotes there.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, that's the individuality of the ego, which is really the guilty, sinful, fearful self that it doesn't want to acknowledge that it is. And that's why it's in its insanity. Goes to incredible lengths, including making up an entire material universe to blame throw and to hide out from these guilty ones, you know, the others that have victimized us, and make up this incredibly elaborate system that reinforces the ego's sense of individuality that can somehow be maintained as separate from the guilt that's outside of itself. And obviously that, you know, has some major flaws, shall we say.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. And then skipping ahead to paragraph 11, and this is the last of, actually I did these in reverse order, the G in the guilt, in the GIST acronym, of guilt, you know, that four criteria for is ego involved. And so we come to the criterion for choice that is the hardest to believe, because its obviousness is overlaid with many levels of obscurity. If you feel, here's a clincher sentence, if you feel any guilt about your choice, you have allowed the ego's goals to come between the real alternatives. And then the real alternative, of course, is choosing against the ego, choosing against that whole thought system, instead of picking illusion A instead of illusion B, thinking that somehow there's something in the world that, you know, outside of ourselves is going to make a difference. And thus you do not realize there are but two, and the alternative you think you chose seems fearful and too dangerous to be the nothingness it actually is. So all those illusions, all those the seeming choices in the world that we think are going to either bring peace to us, or if we choose incorrectly, going to keep us from peace, you know, neither one of those really makes any sense. They're all just smoke screens. They're all just decoys. Or like Ken says, you know, that everything is propaganda for itself.
Yeah.
You know, by default, you know, anything certainly that the ego comes up with as an explanation or interpretation or justification is basically just propaganda for that thought system of sin, guilt, and fear. And you know, one of the mechanisms for these shields of oblivion, the guilt being, and then of course the sin and fear being the inner shield of oblivion that, you know, the mind, that ego is terrified that we might look at. And so in order to keep that from awareness, let's build a whole cosmos. Let's build a giant, colossal universe of space and time, and it'll populate it with individuals and keep fragmenting it and making, you know, billions of just humans on this one planet alone, and let alone, you know, all the other forms of life and of atoms and, you know, spreading out to galaxies and quasars and the whole shebang. And wow, I mean, that's enough to distract someone for quite a while, isn't it?
Yes. Forever.
Forever.
Many lifetimes.
Well, seemingly forever anyway. Yeah.
Yes.
But that's what we value. I mean, that's where we've adopted, you know, this artificial value system that if we look at it, it just doesn't work. And so like the 13th paragraph says, heaven itself is reached with empty hands and open minds, which come with nothing to find everything and claim it as their own.
And I love that sentence. I absolutely love that, especially the first part. Heaven itself is reached with empty hands and mm-hmm. open minds. Mm-hmm. That ought to be a bumper sticker.
Yeah. Kind of reminds me of the that, you know, how do you catch a monkey? And I think people have actually tried this. You know, if you've got a jar full of goodies where the mouth of the jar is less wide than the what's in the jar. And you know, the monkey will reach in and try to grab a whole bunch of, you know, fruit or whatever's in the jar. And because they're trying to get stuff, you know, they can't get their hand out of the jar. Have you ever heard of that?
You know what? I think I have, but yeah. It's been a long time ago.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think that's, you know, that's kind of the ego's modus operandi is trying to get everything on the level of form instead of just allowing, you know, the non-illusory values to arrive just on their own without any interference. And that's the empty hands. If our hands are full, if we're so preoccupied with not the doing things in the world, but thinking that the doing the things in the world are going to make us happy. I think that's the crucial distinction. Mm-hmm. It's not about not doing our job or you know, taking care of our family and community and domestic responsibilities or, you know, our civic duty or any of that. It doesn't mean that we don't do those things. It just means that we don't invest them with the value of the ego's thought system that says, this is going to make me happy. This is going to make me peace.
Right. This is the be all end all.
Yeah, exactly. Because those investments are an empty portfolio, frankly.
Yeah.
So, you know, we just have to find what's already there. And I guess that paragraph continues on with more goodies. It says, we will attempt to reach the state today with self-deception laid aside, with an honest willingness to value, but the truly valuable and the real. Our two extended practice periods of 15 minutes each begin with this. I will not value what is valueless, and only what is value do I seek, for only that do I desire to find. And that actually gives us an opportunity to look at not only when we start to make a value of something in the world and realize, you know, in a humorous way, it's like, oh, yeah, that,
yeah.
that's not going to really, you know, provide any lasting happiness. You know, just going back to that first criteria of time, you know, that usually stops most of those diversions in their tracks. But if we can also remember to be gentle, I think that's such an important thing is, you know, when we find ourselves valuing something specific, just say, oh, I'll forgive myself for having invested this with a property that it doesn't have or a capacity that it doesn't have to bring happiness to me, because it's really my interpretation that has made that illusion seem valid, and it's not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I was just thinking, it kind of goes back to something you were saying earlier. There's lots of things that will make our bodies happy on a temporary basis. Mm-hmm. But a lot of what this speaks to me, I think, is that evasive definition for happiness.
Yeah.
You know, because I know as a person, I throw that word around a lot.
Sure.
You know, what's going to make me happy? But as long as I'm thinking in terms of that happiness has to do with making my body happy, right, you know, making my physical existence happy, mm-hmm, then I'm really missing the boat.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and so there's nothing wrong with making your body happy. But
no.
believing that's really happiness, or that's contentment, that is where it's at, is what the problem is.
Yeah, and that ties into the whole subject of magic thoughts and magic thinking. And you know, the Course suggests that we continue to do the things that it refers to as magical, because, you know, if that minimizes the fear, if that gives us, you know, a temporary fix, so to speak, you know, and thinking of it as a drug, mm-hmm, that recognizing that it's not about changing the form, it's not about, you know, adopting different rituals or not adopting rituals that seem like they could be helpful, whether it's a health regimen or a practice that you find useful in your job or you know, relating to family members or friends or colleagues or whatever. Nothing has nothing to do with that. It basically says, you know, keep on doing the things that seem to work for you, but just don't think that they're going to be the be all end all. And you know, it's again that temporal aspect, I think, is just such a cornerstone of this whole lesson.
Mm-hmm.
That it really brings to mind, you know, that, is it timeless or is it subject to rust and corruption and decay and all that stuff?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, that's something too that I don't know if I'm going to articulate this well, but because it's more of a, kind of just a philosophy or something that I just notice, is that, you know, that's what I feel like we're searching for in our lives all the time, even though we don't know that it's probably that connection to the divine, mm-hmm, but we're always looking for things to be permanent.
Right.
You know, and I think, I mean, I think of it mostly in terms of a homeowner. You know, it's like, okay, now I'm going to build the fence or get the materials that are never going to break down. I'm never going to have to replace this fence. This fence is going to be indestructible, you know, or whether it's the same thing with a piece of furniture or a piece of clothing. And I very much value, and maybe this is just me, but I very much value that idea that this is going to last forever. And what I've recognized is, as I've gotten older, is I've certainly learned nothing lasts forever. I don't care what kind of wood it is or what kind of paint it is. You know, all of these guarantees, you know, these, what do they call them? Lifetime guarantees. Uh-huh. Well, it's like, whose lifetime? You know, because whatever that lifetime means, it's just not true. And yet we continue, I think, to seek that on some level. And to me, that's a proxy for really looking for a divine connection. We know that what's really valuable is eternal. We
right.
know that. But right. we somehow, you know, or we're not satisfied, we settle for trying to find it in some other area of our lives.
Yeah.
Because I know that's one of my triggers, that I get so mad when something doesn't last. You know, it's like, this was supposed to last. And it's like, really? Once again, CA, it's physics. What made you think this was going to last?
Yeah, and physics tells us that, you know, not too many million years from now, the sun will become a red giant or whatever it is, or you know, it'll basically burn itself out. You know, expend all its nuclear fuel, and we'll just have a thermonuclear dump, you know, of a solar system. And so, but you
what? And there goes astrology down the drain.
Oh, shoot. I shouldn't have mentioned that. Yeah, that's blows your whole other theme.
Oh, my God. You mean that's not eternal?
Well, you know, when the planets get absorbed into this giant star, then it'll be a different kind of astrology, right?
But Right.
Yeah. But I just thought of a metaphor. Maybe it'll come back to me. That if something else you said triggered a reminder of something that I'm going to just read the 12th paragraph because I think it ties a lot of it together. All things are valuable or valueless, worthy or not of being sought at all, entirely desirable or not worth the slightest effort to obtain. Choosing is easy just because of this. Complexity is nothing but a screen of smoke, which hides the very simple fact that no decision can be difficult. What is the gain to you in learning this? It is far more than merely letting you make choices easily and without pain. And so there it is. I mean, again, if this course is addressing the mind, never about form, never about what kind of magic seems to help or doesn't seem to help, what kind of content, what kind of, you know, specifics we think are going to, you know, have the best shelf life or you're saying your property values, you know, and staying power and all that kind of stuff. It's obvious that anything that is made out of atoms is going to not be in the eternal category.
Right. And it's going to change.
Yep.
It's going to change.
It's going to be fleeting.
Yes. Yeah, in fact, I mean, this is definitely an aside, but I always think it's kind of funny when in, you know, politics, somebody will get accused of something they said 20 years ago or 10 years ago or maybe even 5, and they go, they changed, you know, and it's like, well, would you not want somebody changing their mind after 5 or 10 or 20 years? I mean, I would consider that intelligence to continue to take in information and make different choices. Somebody who hasn't changed your mind in 20 years, I'd have a problem with that, you know?
Right.
So change is not always bad, but change and transition is certainly part of the illusion. It's not eternal.
Right. But the only real change, the only real alternative that the course discusses is choosing against all the fake ladders down at the bottom of the real ladder that ego props up. And, you know, if you imagine, you know, we've descended this huge ladder of the mind and fallen it off the bottom of the ladder into the world of form, thinking that this is the real deal and that there's a separate specific person that has a name and a driver's license and a, you know, a credit history and all these identity things, you know, and you look at that and you say, well, gee, that must be me, you know, and I, you know, people call me by this name and I turn around when, you know, I hear those patterns of sounds in my ear that I call my name. But that's just a, you know, a habit that we've developed and become so attached to because it provides that smokescreen. It provides the complexity that keeps us mindless. And maybe I could read another couple of paragraphs.
Sure.
Because they're also good. This is 9 and 10 from that lesson 133 that ties into it. Yet is its camouflage a thin veneer which would deceive but those who are content to be deceived. And there's all those other ladders that the ego props up, right? There's you know, the ladder of career, the ladder of relationships, the ladder of the body, the ladder of finances, the ladder of, you know, the home and you know, all there's so many different variations, but they're all the same idea. That's what the course, I think, suggests. Its goals are obvious to anyone who cares to look for them. Here is deception doubled, for the one who is deceived will not perceive that he has merely failed to gain. He will believe that he has served the ego's hidden goals. So when we keep climbing those ladders, we think that we're achieving something until we take an honest look and realize, oh, yeah, that's going away.
Yeah.
Yet though he tries to keep its halo clear within his vision, still must he perceive its tarnished edges and rusted core. His ineffectual mistakes appear as sins to him because he looks upon the tarnish as his own. The rust, a sign of deep unworthiness within himself. Speaking of things you might want to keep up around the house.
Right.
And rust. And the deep unworthiness, of course, is the ego's idea of individuality. Because how could anything that isn't perfect oneness feel complete or worthy? It's got to feel that whole notion that we could be somehow separate or apart or less than totality, less than the all-encompassing unity of God's mind. You know, we may not think of it in those terms consciously, but unconsciously, our factory of experiences in the world keeps dishing out stuff that says, oh yeah, I'll keep bringing up stuff that reinforces that you think you're unworthy. And and out it comes, just like a hidden factory. He who would still preserve the ego's goals and serve them as his own makes no mistakes according to the dictates of his guide. This guidance teaches it is error to believe that sins are but mistakes. For who would suffer for his sins if this were so? And I think that's one of the most hugely important ideas in A Course in Miracles that hit me like between the eyes metaphorically years ago when I was up in the Sierras backpacking with my dog-eared copy and soon to be dog-eared actually at that time. And it was like there's the difference between sin and error. And it's like, wow, that's huge because an error you can correct.
Right. It's a mistake.
You take your little car and you back out of the cul-de-sac instead of trying to, you know, crash through all the houses in that cul-de-sac in order to get through to, you know, the other side. You say, well, maybe I don't need to, you know, try ramming my way through this. I can just back out and get on the main thoroughfare. And, you know, it's not a sin. It's just a detour. It's a smokescreen. It's a distraction. It's a value that isn't working for me. And I can choose a totally different value system where everything is based on inclusion, on eternity, and on a self that is not limited to a single individual, and certainly not based on the sin, guilt, fear thought system that the ego puts out, whether it's labeled as such. You know, it takes a lot of guises. It's all propaganda for itself, but it takes countless forms in, you know, billions and trillions of separate things and objects that all are propaganda for the ego's thought system, unless we look at it and say, oh, this is doesn't have to be about what's in it for me. It can be about what's in it for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
The going home idea.
Right. Well, and as we kind of come to the close of this, I want to go back up to something I think you read before, but it's, you know, to me, it's part of the importance of this lesson too, when it says, why is the choice you make of value to you? What attracts your mind to it? And then what purpose does it serve? So even though then that goes on to say, this is where you can really be deceived, you know, just asking yourself that. I mean, how often do we really stop and say that? What purpose does this serve? And especially if we're in kind of the Course in Miracles mindset, then we can really ask ourselves, is this serving the ego or is this for the purpose of awakening from the dream?
Right.
You know, what is the purpose? And the very stopping and asking yourself is worth it, because it's that little niche in the armor of the ego that says, maybe I have a mind and I can go back to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think one of the most, since this is a very practical lesson, as it just is self-described, the very practical application of what you just said is when you see yourself investing in some kind of grievance, is to say, oh, what's my purpose for saying or not saying what I just said or I'm about to say? And is it to drive a wedge, or, you know, create a sense of differences, better than or worse than, you know, because it could be either. It could be, oh, I'm superior to this person because I know better, or I have, you know, whatever. Or it could be, I'm inferior and I you know, feel unworthy because this other person has something I don't have. You know, in either case, we're choosing to, you know, play into the ego's strategy of separate interests, and thinking that you know, the resources that we have are just what we've taken from others rather than what we share.
And once again, investing in our stories.
Yeah.
Yeah, investing exactly. in our stories and really shoring up all those details.
Right, right.
Well, Bruce, this has been a wonderful conversation as usual. And I want to really thank you for being here today. And before we close out the conversation, is there anything that you'd like to announce?
Thank you, CA. And yes, there's an online virtual conference for A Course in Miracles that's happening on October 16th through 18th. And this is put on by the MiracleShare.org folks. And there's a couple dozen people that are involved. And I'm very grateful and fortunate to be one of those. And I had a lot of fun with it last year and already did the recording. This time I did a conversation rather than a monologue, but that's what the format of each of these half-hour videos are over a three-day period, and all about A Course in Miracles, and a couple dozen plus different teachers, and the second half hour of each hour is a live Q&A session, and these are all recorded. So if you, for example, don't have that weekend free or only part of that weekend free, you can participate in the conference and then watch and listen to it after the fact. So, but there's basically a couple dozen different videos pre-recorded, followed by the Q&A over the phone, where everyone dials in and. Great fun. I totally enjoyed it last year and totally looking forward to all the different presentations this year. So there's more information and links to how to participate on acimblog.com.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
That sounds great. So thank you very much for that information. And also about the idea that if you don't have the whole weekend free, it doesn't mean that it's not something to sign up for.
Right. Right.
Kind of like One Two Academy. We record everything on One Two Academy.
Exactly.
So you can take classes and not even be there. You can listen to them later.
That's actually a good metaphysical point to conclude on, not even being there.
That's right. You don't even have to be there. Well, Bruce, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, CA.
Okay, bye-bye. Everyone, thank you for being here today. I'd like to thank all the listeners and to everybody in the chat room who participated in that way. And also thanks to Scott Weaver, our producer, who always does such a wonderful job. You can find me for readings, personal consultations, mentoring, and coaching on 12listen.com. You can also find me on Tuesdays for my show, Simple Tales, where we discuss one of my favorite illusions in the dream world, astrology. I'm live every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 Eastern. You can also find me on 12 Academy, especially on Thursday evenings. You can also find me there a lot of times on Wednesdays when I'm teaching astrology. On Wednesdays, we tend to do intermediate to advanced classes. And on Thursday, we're doing astrology basics. Next week, I am taking a break. But on October 22nd, you will see the classes resume. And in astrology basics, what we're looking at is we're going to start talking about the interpersonal planets, you know, Mercury and Venus and Mars. So I hope you'll check that out if that's something that you're interested in. And I also hope you'll check out all the classes on 12 Academy. We're really gearing up to offer a lot more and a greater variety on 12 Academy. And as we were just talking about, or I was saying with Bruce, you know, you don't even have to be there for a lot of the classes. Now, some of them, you do need to be there. So it's worthwhile to actually check with the teachers. In my classes, you'll get a handout and you'll also get a recording of the session afterwards. So if you can't be there, it's perfectly okay. So if you've got a hot date or the family wants you, no guilt, no worries. Just sign up for the class and you can listen to the recording later and go through the handout. If you have questions or comments about the course that you'd like to hear addressed on the air, like for instance, let's say you do have a comment or you have a question, or maybe you have something that you would like to hear addressed on the air, you know, a topic, or maybe one of the particular lessons or something from the textbook, just email me at simpletales@comcast.net. So that's just like it sounds, simpletales@comcast.net. You have about 5 minutes before our next live show, which is Christine Demaurier with The Through Line. And I hope you'll stick around today because there's lots of great live programming here on 12 Radio. Until next week, relax and wear loose clothes. You have been listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks and with my guest, Bruce Rawls, on 12 Radio, where we are changing the way you think about life and spirituality, and hopefully changing the way you're thinking about your priorities and your values.